You're listening to Trek FM.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. This is To The Journey.
To the journey!
I'm your co-host, Tristan Riddell, and with me, as always, is...
Charlene Schmidt.
This week, we've been building up to this for 2 weeks, and this episode is our second To The Journey AMA, stands for Ask Me Anything, where we asked you guys 2 weeks ago and last week to submit your questions via email, Twitter, Facebook, and we will answer them.
That is correct, and I want to thank everybody who did participate. We did get several questions. We're going to do our best to get through every single one.
Now, we're going to try to get through as many as we possibly can, but there are some that we are, like, if you're ever wondering, like, hey, you know, why didn't you guys answer my question? Well, we had, it's a combination of factors where we didn't have time to get to it, or, you know, it's a question that we answered already in the first AMA, or it's a question that we have answered in the show either once or several times. Because we did get a few of those where we love your interest, but there's a lot of topics that were asked where from people that I'm assuming haven't caught up yet. Like, isn't up to date with To The Journey.
Yes, and we do know that there's people who start from the very beginning and work their way up. And we're almost at 160 episodes now, so that is no small feat. We get it. But for the sake of those who... have actually managed to comprehensively listen to TTJ. We eliminated those duplicates just so we're not constantly repeating ourselves, and we can answer the questions that are true originals.
Yes, and some of these, as we're going to get to them, and as we get to them, are great show ideas, and so we could spend an entire episode on them, and we'll get to that.
Well, if I'm recalling last time, we did convert a couple of those questions into a show idea.
That's true, we did. And I think, if I remember correctly, those shows were pretty good.
I believe they were, yes. So, who knows? We'll see what happens. We could make magic happen again.
There is always magic on To The Journey.
That is true.
All right, so let's just go ahead and go down the list. So right off the bat, we have Tristan Goers. Great name.
Yes.
Great name.
Tristan, yep.
Yes. What are your favorite shows aside from Star Trek?
Oh, how much time have you got? okay, here's what I've been watching lately. I do a lot of Netflix, and I know that you do too, Tristan. I am a big fan of House of Cards and Orange is the New Black. I got into BoJack Horseman and binged through that like crazy. I loved that show. Tristan, you got me into Bob's Burgers, which I also adore. I have been watching the X-Files revival, but we do have another question about that down the line, so I'll save any thoughts I have on that. And I'm probably forgetting a million others, but that's kind of more of like what I'm watching right now and really enjoying. How about you?
Well, that's a really loaded question for me because there's so many great shows that I love and own. You know, I have them on DVD, Blu-ray.
Better Call Saul!
Yeah, that's a show that we both love, Better Call Saul.
Yeah, sorry, had to interject. That's so good.
Char, you and I love some of the same shows. Like, I'm a big House of Cards fan. As you said, I'm a big Bob's Burgers fan. Basically AMC is my place of enjoyment because some of my favorite shows of all time are Breaking Bad, Walking Dead, and Better Call Saul, and Mad Men.
Yeah.
So it's funny because when people ask me the question like, "Hey, what are some of your favorite shows?" I always say, "Well, besides Star Trek, you know, like because it's just like it's Star Trek and." Everything else. Like, those are the two categories in my life.
Yeah, Star Trek is on a plane all by itself.
Yeah. Like, growing up, I was a big Hercules and Xena fan. You know, I am not ashamed to admit that I love Dawson's Creek. I also loved Gilmore Girls. We also have a Gilmore Girls question down on the low, so there must be somebody in there who knows my love of Gilmore Girls. And I don't know, there's just so many dimensions, but those are just a few. Oh, I just got done doing a Frasier rewatch on Netflix.
Oh, great show. Great show.
If you guys haven't seen that in a long time or if you've never seen it, go and watch it. There are 11 seasons And it doesn't slow down until the 8th season, and then it picks right back up in the 9th and 10th season. It's amazing. Nice. It is constantly funny, and it's a very undervalued show.
Very much, because I feel like Friends overshadowed everything else that was good and airing in that same kind of time frame, you know? Yeah. And yeah, Frasier's great sitcom. Excellent show.
Excellent show.
Okay. So the next question comes from Brandon Shea Mutalip. Who's that? Seems vaguely familiar. I think I've maybe heard him on a couple things. I'm not sure. He asks, what was your first Trek episode? Oh, boy. Tristan, do you remember the first one you watched?
Yeah. It was an encounter at Farpoint. Yeah, that was the first episode I watched because I was an infant in my...
Okay, no. And you actually remember it, sort of like how Harry remembers being in his mother's womb kind of thing?
Brandon didn't ask what was your first Trek episode that you remembered. He said, what was your first Trek episode?
This is true. I guess the reason why I want to make this specific is because I do not remember my first Trek episode. I remember being 6 years old and watching the original series, but I could not tell you for the life of me what that episode was. Like that very first one was. Now, the very first one that I really remember, Trouble with Tribbles.
Nice.
Yes, that is the one that did stick with my little six-year-old brain. But I know I watched other ones before it. It's just, you know, time goes by and the memory gets a little fuzzy. And yeah, no, I don't remember. Sorry.
The first, there's two that pop into my head that I have actual memories of watching, and that's the Next Generation Neutral Zone and Next Generation Cupid.
Oh, hey.
We taped all of the episodes as much as we could, and we sent them on to my uncle, who was living overseas at the time. And so that's why I was exposed to them as an infant. And so those tapes would leave us, and so I wouldn't have those tapes. And so... but there was a few that we were able to catch on miscellaneous tapes and everything like that that weren't Uncle Randy tapes. And Neutral Zone and Cupid were the earliest ones that I remember watching over and over and over and over and over again.
Right on. All right, next question.
Which engineering set is your favorite? This is from Lisa Brown. This is a good question. I love these kind of questions. Like, what ship's your favorite? What's your favorite type of nacelle? You know, I love that kind of stuff.
Well, we all know resident nacelle expert Daniel Prue has a lot to say about nacelles.
I love it when he talks about nacelles.
Ample nacelles. Yeah, baby.
So what's your favorite set?
My bias is going to show a little bit, and I'm going to say Voyager. There's just something that's beautiful and sleek about it. It's got, I think, a little more symmetry than the TNG Enterprise D bridge engineering set does anyway. Now, Enterprise E gives it a run for the money because it's, right, a little more of the same time, a little more of the same design. Mm-hmm. But there, you know what really does it for me is the hum of the warp core. I just love that thing. And we've talked about that before, where, you know, that's the heartbeat of the ship and it characterizes the ship based on how things go when it's going like crazy at warp 9 and when things are just, you know, humdrum at impulse power. And... I don't know. There's just something about Voyager's warp core that I really dig. And yeah, that's, I don't know. That's my answer. It's kind of got a nice symmetrical design and I like the warp core. So I've got to go with Voyager. How about you?
Well, with me, whenever I think engineering, like when somebody says engineering or warp core, the image that pops in my brain is Enterprise D.
Okay. Yeah.
I see Geordi and Data working in engineering. I see those blue lines, you know, like moving up and down. That's what's always in my brain. But my favorite, is Voyager. And not just because we host a Voyager show, but because of all the reasons that you stated. It's very beautiful. It's the most beautiful engineering set that we've ever seen and the most beautiful warp core that we've ever seen. And we've never seen anything like it since, like before or since. And it's, I'd have to say my favorite is Voyager. But my brain wants to say Enterprise D.
For nostalgic reasons. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Enterprise D, I mean, it's also a very beautiful engineering set. There's absolutely nothing wrong with that choice. But there is something about Voyager that's just so incredibly beautiful. I mean, when they design that ship, all of those plans come to life are just incredible. They did such a bang-up job with designing that ship. The bridge, engineering, even the ready room, Janeway's ready room, is amazing. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just so good. Oh, and then, of course, we have the mess hall, which, I don't know, I adore. I love the fact that that got converted from the captain's private dining room, which does not ever need to be a thing on a ship that small, repurposed for much better use, even if Neelix did not ask for permission.
All right, so the next one.
Yes, okay, X-Files question. You've talked about loving X-Files, so how did you like the recent 6-episode run? This comes from Greg Mulby, who is very much an active person on the Babel Conference and really just all over Trek FM. He writes in very often. That's a very loaded question. You know, as we've gone through these 6 episodes, I've gone from loving it to absolutely hating it to, well, that figures. I've been all over the map with this new X-Files, and I just pulled a Tina from Bob's Burgers. I feel a little dubious about continuing the run. I know a lot of people are just screaming for it, but I feel like with the last episode, I knew there were going to be more questions than answers, for sure. That's X-Files. It went out, I guess, well enough, considering that Mulder was tripping on mushrooms in the episode before that. That was a little bit of an elevation, and it's better than I want to believe, that second god-awful movie, which would have been a horrible way for the franchise to die.
I could argue with you on that one. No, just so you know, I hated I Want to Believe. I think it's a garbage movie.
It is.
But I don't think the X-Files revival can even compete with that.
Really? Ooh, okay, that movie was so god-awful I could barely even get through it, whereas at least I could stick with these episodes and watch it to the end. It doesn't feel quite as much of a bitter end as I Want to Believe. I mean, I really hated that movie.
Greg, if you want to hear my full thoughts, like, I won't go into it because I just got done recording an episode for it on Nerd Nuptial. So check out the 2nd episode. It's called My Science. And me and my wife go in depth as to what we thought of the X-Files revival. So if you are interested in that, check that out there.
Yeah, I will finish off by saying I really feel like they did not exploit this opportunity to its fullest potential. It started off well enough, and then I just feel like for only 6 episodes, they did a lot of that. You know, I'm trying to stay spoiler-free for those who have not watched it and want to. It just felt like with such a limited run, they could have done so much more. They could have packed so much in, and they've wasted maybe a good half of it, if not more, which is very unfortunate. It was kind of fun to see Mulder and Scully back at it again, and yet, what are you doing? That's how I felt half the time.
Yeah.
So I'll end with that. Okay, next question.
All right. Next one we have from Alan McDonald. If Q declared you were going to be marooned on any of the worlds visited by Voyager, which one would you choose? I have a very, like, I don't even need to think about this one. My only reservation is, do I have to interact with this guy? And that would be the creepy pleasure guy and his planet.
I knew it.
Not at all pleasurable.
Sadly, that was the first thing that came to my mind. And then I immediately said no, because I do not want to get anywhere near that creeper.
Well, it's a big planet, so hopefully you could just move to a different city.
But that aside, I don't know. I don't know if I could deal with the whole, oh, it's not at all pleasurable, you know, just getting bored with one amazing innovation to the next, to the next, to the next. Yes, they're prosperous, and yes, it's a beautiful place, but I don't know if I could deal with those people. I might have to end it with a homicidal rage, and then what? Then I'm in trouble. So, I can't go there, but I wish you luck with the creepy pleasure guy. Yeah, you know what I think I really might do? As long as I had a shuttlecraft, I would go to New Earth. That beautiful, tranquil little paradise to have a monkey for a pet. And as long as I had a shuttle to travel around and visit other worlds and not get bored there, you know, living in isolation.
But this is a marooned. This is if
oh,
Q
wait.
Declared you were going
Oops.
To be marooned.
Oh,
and also,
oh.
So like you'd have to deal with the storms as well.
Yes, I would. And I would constantly be repairing my shelter. I don't know. That said, it's still a really beautiful place. I don't know. Homicide or abandonment? In isolation. That's a tough choice. I'm not making good choices here. but you know what? No, screw it. If I could negotiate with Q to have a bathtub, I would still pick New Earth.
All right. Hey, that's a solid answer. Yeah.
There we go. Okay.
You could just live in a cave.
As long as I'm not on the basics planet with the Neanderthals and the snake monsters. Okay, next question comes from Stephen Tudor. Who do you want Rory to end up with in the Gilmore Girls revival? Oh, this one's for you.
Stephen, I'm glad you asked that question because the answer is no one. I do not want Rory to end up with anyone in the revival.
Good answer.
Or somebody new. Somebody new who respects her independence and respects her as a person and as an adult and as a career woman. I don't want her to end up with Dean. I don't want her to end up with Jess. I don't want her to end up with Logan. None of those people. Either nobody or somebody that we haven't met yet. Because one thing that I really, really enjoyed is that in a, Good Morning America segment, like Alexis Bledel and Lauren Graham were being interviewed. Somebody asked Alexis Bledel this question. They're like, this was before the revival, but she said, she's like, who do you think Rory's with right now? You know, like just out in the ether, who do you think she ended up with? And then Alexis Bledel said, nobody, she's on her own. And I just love that that's what her answer was because so many people ask this question. And so Stephen, I share the opinion of Alexis Bledel.
That is a fantastic answer. Why does she have to end up with anybody? And I just for the record, I don't even really watch Gilmore Girls, so I hardly know who Rory is. But the fact that she's an independent woman and doesn't need no man, well, you know what? I'm all for that. Let her stand on her own 2 feet and make decisions for herself.
Last we saw her, she was traveling and becoming a correspondent on the Obama campaign before he was elected.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She's good.
All right. Next one. Roy Totti. Awesome name.
It is.
I have found that Star Trek has shaped what I look for in fiction. For example, I enjoy shows like MASH, The West Wing, and The Wire, in part because I feel they have aspects in common with Trek. What shows do you two enjoy besides Trek, in part because you feel they share a commonality with Star Trek? This is a hard question. And I would be really interested to see how he thinks The Wire shares commonality with Star Trek. I've only seen a few episodes, so I can't speak against it, but I am very interested in what he says for it.
Yes, I would be interested in that as well, because I've only seen the first few of season one. I kind of got into it for a little while, and then I got distracted and went on to other things, and I've not watched it since. So, apologies, I do need to watch The Wire. I hear it's an amazing show. Okay, so this is much more specific than just what other shows do you like, because of the commonality. I would say the big one that immediately comes to my mind is Babylon 5. Yes, it is a science fiction show, but it has a lot of ties to, you know, kind of the morality play and doing the right thing. And why are you laughing, Tristan?
No reason.
No, seriously, Babylon 5, if you've not watched Babylon 5, do yourself a favor, find it and get it. I don't think it's available on a whole lot of streaming outlets, unfortunately, because it is a 90s show and they haven't necessarily remastered it. But if you can find it, get your hands on it and watch it. It is an amazing 5-year story. It takes place on a space station. And the guy from Tron, Bruce Boxleitner, plays one of the captains throughout the story. And it's a great arc. And if you liked the Dominion War arc on DS9, you're probably going to like Babylon 5 because there's a big war story. And it's very involved. There's so much going on, and there's such great characters on Babylon 5. That's definitely my top pick. Does anything come to mind for you right away?
There's no like one show that I could really say I like because of it has Star Trek aspects. I mean, the only one that I can really think of, and I don't think this is the vein that he was talking about, and that would be Futurama. I love all the Star Trek references that they make, and I love the sense of adventure and exploration that they do. But it's very different from Star Trek. I think he's talking about like the themes of acceptance and diplomacy and things like that. I would assume that's what Roy is talking about. But I think I can't talk about in-universe themes as much as I could say how Star Trek kind of opened up a world for me of sci-fi that also lend into fantasy, where growing up, I was big Hercules and Xena fan.
Right. Yeah, you mentioned that earlier.
They're very campy. you know, they're very cheesy. And it kind of reminds me of the original series about how, you know, early Hercules and early Xena, like, it was just episode-based. It was, like, self-contained stories, and they moved from one, you know, part of Greece to the next. But then as the show got older, it started becoming more serialized and longer storylines and episode arcs. And so in that way, it kind of reminds me of Star Trek about how we started with TOS, and then we moved on to TNG, and then we had Deep Space Nine that started becoming serialized. And now I guarantee you that the new Star Trek show is going to be serialized. And so that's what hopefully I found a creative way to answer your question, Roy. But that's all that I can think of right now.
That's pretty good. All right. Next question. This is kind of funny, from Lark Bomb. This is for me. Is Aaron Harvey your hubby or what? What's your story together either way? Okay. Yes, we do spend some time together because we're both in Los Angeles. And yeah, we're buds. We hang out. But he is not my husband. He's my gay husband. This is the joke that we've had since we saw this question on Facebook. I am married to another person, and he is involved with somebody else. We are just friends. And the way that we kind of just got to where we are with our friendship is he wrote into TTJ. Mm-hmm. And we actually, in a very rare instance, we do not do this very often at all, we actually read his letter on air with his permission, because it was so incredibly touching and detailed, and went into details about the heart transplant he went through and things we were talking about with Neelix and Mortal Coil and how he identified with that so much. And from there, you know, we would occasionally interact on Twitter or Facebook or what have you. And then when I moved to LA, he said, hey, let's meet up. And so we have, and now he's the art director at Trek FM, so we get together fairly often to discuss things for the network and get things like t-shirt designs going and things of that nature, and so that's how that happened.
Yeah, he's become a good friend and integral part of the network.
Very much so. So much that he even has his own podcast now, Saturday Morning Trek.
And you guys should check it out, because they had quite a get when they started their show.
Yes, indeed, they did. They got to interview Walter Koenig about all sorts of things, about the animated series, writing an episode for the animated series, among many other things. Check that out if you haven't listened to that yet. That was a great interview.
All right, next one is from Ron Sarna. Of all the fictional foods Neelix has created, if you were stranded on a desert island, which one would be your only constant meal until rescue? Replicated foods do not count. This one is pretty torturous, because I don't think there's anything in the show that he's made that people have gone, ooh, I love this.
I can think of one thing, and it's probably the only thing he might have ever made without Leola root, and that's why it's going to be my pick. I'm probably going to die from malnutrition, but I will take a Jabalian fudge cake over anything with Leola root ever.
See, I go the exact opposite, because if I'm stranded on a desert island and I have to, you know, sustain myself until rescue, I don't want the Jabalian fudge cake for that very reason of malnutrition. And also, even if it tastes terrible, I am dying to know what Leola root tastes like.
You fool!
I wish I lived in a world where we could do that, where it's we find these fictional foods or these alien foods, and then it's just like, oh yeah, like the creators are like, it tastes like this, and then it's made, and that's what it tastes like. And so yeah, give me Leola root, bring it on. That's what I want. I want to know it, as I'm eating it and going, oh, I love it so much. Like, I'll just be spitting it out at the same time.
Just like Chakotay did when he first tried it. Now, would you just eat Leola root straight up, or would you want it in an actual recipe?
I'd want it in stew. I'd want a
Leola root stew.
Yeah, that's what I'd want, because it's hearty. It'll keep the fat on my bones until rescue.
Fair enough. All right. Our next question comes from William Treadwell. And he says, if you got to write a Voyager series but set in the JJ verse, what changes would you make to show the difference in the timelines and make a stronger show? Ooh, that's a little loaded.
Yeah, well, William, we get this question a lot.
Yes, we've had it before.
Yeah, so we probably are going to do a show about this in the near future.
Yeah, I don't think this is something we can answer in even 5 minutes, so let's save this one and do an individual show on it.
Well, I can give a short answer in the meantime. Lens flares.
There's your quick answer. All right,
there
very
go.
Good.
Long answer to come. Next question is from Andrea Boot, or Andrea, I apologize. if you were stranded, another desert island question. If you were stranded on a desert island and only had three objects available to use, what would they be? So this is a non-Star Trek question, I'm assuming.
Yes. Yes. This has nothing to do with Q.
If I was stranded on a desert island, I would die immediately. Like, I have no survival skills. I talked about this on Nerd Nuptial with my wife about during the zombie apocalypse. Like, we would be gone in the first week. If I had three objects, I would like a shovel, because that seems, like, appropriate. Like, you should...
Practical, yes.
Yeah. I'd have a shovel, a spear, and a net for fish.
All right. That makes sense. A knife. The most common answer. You got to have something to cut things. A net. Even though I'm a vegetarian and I don't eat fish, if I were stranded on a desert island, I would probably have to eat something. And who knows what kind of vegetation I'd have available. So, and then my third one, I'm pretty close to going for a blanket. I've got to have something to keep me warm at night on a desert island. It gets cold at night in the desert.
I like your answer. Like, knife is smart, net is smart, and blanket is smart. Yeah, I like that. Good answers. Good answers.
Now, our next one comes from a listener we know very well because we interact with her quite often. Her name is Emily Whitaker, and she is awesome. She asks, I know almost every episode you and Tristan say how excited you are for the week's topic. True. But which TTG episodes are your actual favorite ones to prepare for and record? Hey, good question. It's not fair to say all of them because that's not necessarily true. Some require a lot more preparation than others. Yeah. And even though a lot of times that leads to a really great episode, sometimes depending on if it's been a busy week or not or something like that, it feels kind of like a rat race. I like the ones that require a moderate amount of preparation, maybe sometimes even no preparation at all, where we're on the spot and we're making something up right as we go. Like, I really do enjoy our writer's room episodes where we've got the blank slate and we have to make something in 45 minutes or less. Those are fun. But I love our marathon lists. I just like our lists, period, because it's a nice, concise arrangement. 5 episodes, pick them, explain why. It's a moderate amount of preparation. It's fun. And even though it seems like lately we've been overlapping our picks a little bit, it's still fun to come up with these and discuss, just in general, I think, our love for the show, which does not ever get old.
Yeah, I'd have to say, for me, like the episode on the fly rewrites, I really enjoy those. I also like our rewrites, and I dread those, but enjoy them when we record them. Like, I dread them as we prepare for them.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, but I'd say besides those, I'd have to say Essential Trek is pretty fun. That's a lot of fun to go through every single episode of a season and have you argue with each other about why we should keep it or why we shouldn't. I'd have to say those two, like episode rewrites on the fly and Essential Trek.
Yeah, Essential Trek is a lot of fun. I do enjoy that too. Cool.
All right, next one is from Damian Haywood, a good friend of the show and good friend of my other shows. And Damian, come on. Which Voyager crew member would you hate to be stuck in the Delta Flyer with? He's always so negative. I called him on this the other day. I said, Damian, why always with the negativity? And he said, at least I'm consistent, is his reply.
Hey, that's a completely valid answer.
So a member you would hate to be stuck in the Delta Flyer with. You know what? To be honest with you, I think I would hate to be stuck in a Delta Flyer with Seven.
That's my answer.
Yeah.
Okay, what's your reason?
Well, my reasoning would be is like she wouldn't be very talkative. And like, here's the thing is that like I want somebody who's talkative like Tom, but not overly talkative like Neelix.
Yes, agreed.
Like Seven is kind of maybe paired with Tuvok, where they would just be downright rude. They wouldn't want to have a conversation with you. And
yeah,
you know what? Maybe I'll change my answer to Tuvok and say like later season Seven, maybe I could stand with. But I think Tuvok for all 7 seasons would be awkward to be trapped in the Delta Flyer with.
Yes, conversation is irrelevant in terms of that. I'm going to go with Seven because, she would not care about passing the time and just making idle conversation and maybe having a little fun getting to know one another. And therefore, it's going to be a very boring trip back to Voyager. And so that's why she is my pick.
All right.
Sorry, Seven. Just No, that would be really boring. She'd be really good if there was trouble along the way, because she would know, at least have some expertise on what to do. But, yeah, for the rest of the time, boy, I'd better have some Sudoku or something to pass the time.
Nice.
Next question comes from Christopher Daisy, a very common name we see in the Babel Conference. He says, talk about what art or artists you like, what galleries or museums you've been to, and what you enjoyed the most looking at or experiencing when you were there. A very different question for us here. Cool. I cannot say I'm a big art appreciator. I am not involved enough in that world to really know a big who's who and have just downright, you know, favorites, recommendations, and I can't say I've been to so many galleries and museums that I've got a whole list of favorites. However, one thing that does immediately stick out is going to the Getty and seeing so many things. I mean, it's really, you can't do that museum in one day. And the Getty is in Los Angeles. We went there for a day on my honeymoon back in 2007. And there's so much there. There's art from just about every time you can imagine, all styles. There's something there for everybody, and they have a beautiful botanical garden, which might have been my favorite part. And so that would be a recommendation of mine. If you have not actually been to the Getty yet, definitely go if you're in LA. It's so cool. How about you, Tristan?
I'm a huge art lover, and this is a topic I don't actually get to talk about that much. And so so Christopher, I am really appreciative that you asked this question, because my wife and I love art, and we have a lot of it hanging on our walls, and we go to museums constantly, but we have nobody we know are fellow art lovers. Like, our closest friends aren't art lovers, and it's you kind of feel a little isolated certain times. I live in the Chicagoland area. I live in the North Burbs, and we are absolutely spoiled here in Chicago with the museums at our fingertips. We have some of the greatest art and paintings in the world, including some sculpture. And I think the only other location that in the United States that it could rival, of course, is New York.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just museum after museum of just great works from famous artists and also artists you've never heard of, so you can experience new art. My wife and I, we went to the Smithsonian last year. We went to single exhibit that we possibly could at the Smithsonian.
Nice.
Also in Milwaukee, there is a fantastic art museum that's right on the water. It's an architectural marvel. It's really cool. It's got wings that can separate and rotate and everything like that. Like at certain times of the day. And actually, to get specific, I think my wife and I's favorite type of art is abstract expressionism.
Okay.
So, you know, like the people that we love are, you know, your Kandinskys, your Koonings, Pollock, Newman. I just started getting into Franz Klein. I know he's been around, obviously, for a long time, but I've just been getting into Franz Klein. And I actually saw his piece called Requiem at the Milwaukee Museum, and I was absolutely enamored. And right now, it's my favorite piece. It's Requiem by Franz Klein. It's I would say Google it just so you can get an idea of it, but it does not give it justice. Like a Google image does not give it justice. You'd need to see it in person.
Yeah, I imagine not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you had a much more specific answer to this question than I did. As an art lover, you did justice to that. So thank you.
All right. The next one is from Michelle Tuvin. I have yet to listen to any TTJ. Well, get on it.
She will. She will.
I think I'll make this my first one. Smile emoticon. So my question is, what are essential TTJ episodes, or the greatest hits, as it were?
Here's why Michelle hasn't listened to TTJ. I've talked with Michelle quite a bit on Twitter, and it's because she just finished watching Voyager for the first time. So we got to give her some slack. She's a really nice lady. So... All right, greatest hits. Boy, okay, this is kind of hard just because we're almost 160 freaking episodes in, and it's really hard just to even remember everything. The one that really sticks out is, if you want to get to know us a little better, TTJ 102 is an excellent choice because we delve into a little bit about our personal lives and how that intertwines with Voyager. So I would recommend that one for sure. I definitely want to throw out episode one because it's episode one and it kind of talks about how we got into Star Trek and just our initial feelings on Voyager, that excitement when the show was coming out. That's probably a really good one to start with because it's episode one.
like you said, we've done so many episodes, it's hard to remember way back. But my go-to one for people is episode 102. You know, I Need My Pain is what it's called. And it's, you know, turning to Trek during the tough times. It's we got more response from that episode than any other episode that we've ever done. That episode struck a chord with people. So I think you should definitely listen to episode 102, like Char said. I love To the Journey. I love this show. I love what we do here. And so basically our latest stuff is my favorite stuff because I feel like we're constantly doing new things and better things. We're getting better. And I absolutely loved episode 156, where it's called Matt Ship 7/Bashir, and it's What If Voyager Came Home During the Dominion War. I loved that episode that we did. It was so much fun. And it's just
yeah,
recent.
That was good. And it was great having Matt Rushing there to kind of give us some more Deep Space Nine perspective. It was a very well-rounded show, and we explored so much good stuff in that one. I have a couple other ones that I want to throw out there, and I want to see if you agree. What TTJ 104? We must have been on a really good trip between 102 and 104. That was where we talked about the Voyager reunion 10 years after coming home and what everybody was doing. That was a fun one. I mean, if nothing else, I really had a good time recording that one. But I feel like it came out really good, too. So I want to mention that one.
Also, I want to mention we have a handful of episode rewrites that we're all proud of for all of them. But I think a few that you should definitely listen to is our Resolutions rewrite, episode 56.
That's the next one I wanted to bring out because I feel like that personally was my best rewrite that we've done so far. Oh, Bridgemates. Hello. Episode 117, where we did the Bridgemates rematch. We went on Earl Grey first, and then we had the second Bridgemates contest here on TTJ, a Voyager style, and still beat Team Free Enterprise. We became the first back-to-back champs.
And also our holiday specials. We have three holiday specials, and we put a lot of work into these, and we have a lot of fun with them. And we look forward to doing them every year. I can't remember the first one. I don't think you can find the first one because it was just like a holiday message. It was just saying like, hey, you know, like happy holidays, happy Kwanzaa, happy Peldor Joy. Or, you know, like we just started listing.
Yeah, these newer ones are a little different. We've put a lot more effort into them.
Yes, that's episode 103 and episode 149. The first one's called Lower Prixen, where we introduce what it would be like if Char and I were actually crewmates on Voyager. And in episode 149, it's called Warnog, which is about the struggles of of basically my character trying to get ahead.
Yes, and me strategically trying to place mistletoe. Yes, that was so much fun. And we always have a blast recording TTJ, but those in particular are very special just because we collaborate on those. We come up with the ideas. We write them. We have to, you know, get our acting legs going a little bit because it's not just us. We have our characters, if you will. And it's so much fun. So, yeah, those definitely stand out.
It's a lot of fun.
Good times. Okay, well, we have managed to get through all of the questions that were not repeats in our TTJ AMA, and we are officially out of town. So how perfect is that? So asking us anything is not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, the Orb.
The Wadi, a fun-loving race from the Gamma Quadrant, arrive at DS9 eager to play a game with Sisko and the crew, one that appears to be a matter of life and death. All right, so are we moving along, Matthew?
Oh, we're moving along.
The Ready Room.
He's carrying in the lamb chop sock puppet saying, she stayed at her post.
While Charlie Horse ran.
While Charlie Horse ran.
To the journey! And then sexiness ensues and it's a slow dissolve to the next morning.
Fantastic. Okay. Check. Janeway gets some.
Check. Janeway gets some. Confirmed. Commentary. Trek stars.
You know, you come up with something stupid because of some joke that someone said and someone else said, and then all of a sudden you're doing a tournament of movies which J.J. Abrams produced to determine which one is the crappiest.
Women at Warp.
AF, which are the initials that Picard carved into Boothby's tree back on Starfleet Academy, and that is how he met Boothby the groundskeeper.
Well, we never did learn Boothby's first and second name, did we? It was all a ploy to get to hang out with Boothby.
Meta Trex.
What I find most interesting is that when Deanna suggests it, Riker doesn't say, "What? That's a crazy idea," or "I've never thought about that." He's just like, "Oh, okay, good idea." And like, it's a normal thing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a normal thing to call up something in the holodeck and kind of work through it or live through it.
Melodic Trex.
The reason why I think Brian Reitzel would be a more plausible choice is because he has worked with Fuller in the past. They worked together on Hannibal. He scored that series, all 39 episodes. The neat thing about Brian Reitzel's music is it's more of a sound design than it is a score.
Saturday Morning Trek.
Chekhov was in the first season, but he was working on the third deck behind the boiler room and was ill with a condition called Malaprovsky's malady, which is a kind of 23rd century version of Montezuma's revenge, and was hidden in the bathroom, ensconced there for hours and hours, while poor Mr. Khanna's genetically engineered kidneys, about to explode, pounded pitifully on the door, begging to be let in, until finally the door opens, Chekhov steps out, Khan looks at him and says, "Your face, I remember."
That's the best explanation I've ever heard.
you get the idea that I've told this story before.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. We have new Trek Talk coming to you every single day of the week. Oftentimes now it's more than one episode of a podcast, so that's pretty unreal. None of it is possible without the help of our folks on Patreon. Go to patreon.com/trekfm. Consider becoming a subscriber if you aren't already. We're a listener-supported network, and we need your help to keep this thing going. On TTJ, we have our associate producers, Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, Bruce Lish, Aaron Harvey, and Dante Hopkins to thank because they support us in particular, but the network as a whole. Go and check that out, guys. If you like Trek FM and you want to see this thing live long and prosper, consider helping us out if you haven't already. It means a lot to us. So we have the second AMA done, and now we go on to next week. What are we doing?
What we're doing next week is what we talked about we loved in this episode, and that is Essential Trek. We are doing season 6 and going through every single episode and debating and arguing and ultimately deciding on which episodes are essential to Voyager and which ones are not. But you'll have to tune in next week to find out. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!
I'm sorry. I'm just really, really sorry, but there's a buzzing going on in the back.
Oh, okay. That's fine.
2 seconds. 2 seconds.
One, two. You're late.
Shut up.
I heard that.